In today's podcast, I talk to the fabulous Orla McCluskey. Orla is one of the founders of one of the fastest growing fashion brands in the world, Rixo. The story of Rixo is as charming as it is inspiring, and it began 4.5 years ago in the living room of two best friends, Orla and Henrietta. Just out of college and with a passion for all things vintage, they wanted to fill a gap in the market, to create dresses that suit all ages, flatter all women, but made from high quality materials at an attainable price point. And they've done that and a hell of a lot more. I'm Louise Duffy and this is the Brand Pumice Podcast. In today's podcast, I am joined by the lady who puts the O in Rixo. It's yes. Orla. How are you?
I'm not too bad. Yeah, flying this morning. So
it's so nice to see you. I'm so happy to see the person who's accountable for 50% of my wardrobe.
Well, you were one of our first ever customers.
I know. I've been stalkery. Could we call me a customer stalker?
Basically, you'd ordered a dress online and you got this personal note being like, I know who you are. Ah. I was like the stalker at the time.
But I was so impressed on the other side because I was getting married and I was putting, you know, you're going on honeymoon and I wanted my trousseau, I suppose we could call it. I was putting together a few bits and this came and it was like, and you lovely scarves in and handwritten note. And everything was classy.
I was thinking, this lady might think I'm a psycho.
Oh, I'm so happy.
But you shouldn't really be looking at customers to know. But I obviously, it was me and Henrietta there packing them in the living room.
Imagine.
And I was like, I know that name. I'm sure on Instagram. And then I just knew.
Oh, I was so happy with it. My camellia dress. And I still wear it all the time.
Freaked out or something.
Oh, I was delighted. I did a head count then yesterday with my fashion loving family, you know, so like I have three cousins, my auntie, my mom and my sister-in-law, and I was like, okay, round up, how many Rixo pieces have we between us? And we're like up on about 30 between the seven of us.
It does suit so much different people.
Yeah.
Which is so nice for us, because I think there's nothing worse than someone feeling they don't belong to a brand.
Yeah.
And I've got three sisters. We all wear Rixo totally different.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so nice to see that actually someone can put it on and feel really good about it. And then they're sharing it with someone else and you can kind of like chat to your mum or your friend about what you're wearing. And it doesn't feel like they feel isolated from the brand.
Yeah. No, I share all of my stuff with my mum. Well, my Rixo stuff with my mum. But that's something that it's kind of the Rixo girl is across generations.
Yeah, 100%.
And I think you were doing that before other brands started to do it. Was it maybe about 3 years ago you had the season where it was the mum and daughter?
Our first ever lookbook was, we actually wanted an older model. So Henrietta's mum's really into vintage and her and her mum shared loads of clothes.
Yeah.
And we were like, well, for us, vintage is about a certain style and aesthetic rather than being about an age group.
Mm-hmm.
So we always had this idea that we wanted the pieces of Rixo to be like future vintage that like someone would pass on or they'd wear until they didn't fit into it. Or you know how it's like people's bodies change. Rather than it being about an age, it's something about how you wear it.
Mm-hmm.
So we always wanted an older model, but couldn't afford. There only was a few kind of older models in like model agency books in London and they were so expensive.
Yeah.
So we're like, well, that idea's out the window because we can't afford the model. The day before our first lookbook, I seen this older lady in the gym.
Oh,
honestly,
God.
She was totally not even dressed. She was in the changing rooms. Probably like another like moment where I was a freak. I'm sitting there checking her out, being like, she's this gorgeous long grey hair and she's beautiful. And then I was like, can you actually, are you free tomorrow? And she was like, yeah. She was basically a neighbour because the gym was 2 seconds from her home. And she's been in her lookbooks and shit.
Are you
since.
Serious?
Yeah. Like, honestly, and we just meet for coffees and she's not even a model. I think she does like property management.
Oh my God.
And she was just in the Christian Lacroix show. We just stay in touch. And that was her first ever model.
That's
and she,
so
was
funny.
Just at the gym.
She was probably at the stage where she's like, I'm never going to get discovered now. And then, hey, it happened.
I know, her daughter always looks at her in magazines and is like, oh, that's my mum.
Oh my God, how funny.
But I think it just shows you like where you've got an idea and you're always keeping an eye and always looking for an opportunity. You can.
I know.
I mean, it was a real luck as well, because about 12 hours before I actually shot the lookbook, we were like, we've got another
You're
model.
Under pressure. and how well it worked out.
It is nice that we've always wanted to keep that element of like, age is not a thing in terms of how you dress. It's more about someone's style and someone's body shape.
That's it. And like I say, we have so between my family, like we all share everything still, even though we all have our own little bits and we all share them. If a wedding's coming up, it's like, well, I'll take the one you got last year. And it's amazing, isn't it?
No, I do love it. That it's, and I think that actually has been quite sustainable. It's actually getting something that you feel like won't be shoved in the back of a wardrobe exactly. in a year's time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That it can be shared and passed on.
100%.
So let's talk about you and Henrietta, because yes. that is a friendship goals, but business goals too. Like ye are so in sync, but your friendship goes back. You were friends first, met in college.
Met in university, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think we always laugh. Henrietta always says, I remember when you walked in and I just loved what you were wearing. And then you were really nice and friendly and chatty, and we'd obviously been at this like fashion university and everyone was quite kind of keeping themselves. I was just coming in like full blowing, saying hi. And she was like, I was just straight away, I just knew we were going to be friends. And I'd actually originally went and done a foundation art design in London and was so homesick. Aww. I wanted to go back to Belfast and do architecture with my twin sister.
Oh, wow. So, imagine. Yeah.
And it was only...
There would be the most glamorous buildings all around.
Well, my sister's really into like interiors as well. And she's like Rick's biggest advocate. She has like probably more of the collection than I actually have.
Really?
But yeah, I went back and then we met on fashion management. So we were friends. We were doing that for 4 years. Mm-hmm. And we worked on like projects and stuff together. And it was actually... It was a tutor that said to us, I think you two should do something together because you work really well and you've got quite a similar eye, which is half the battle when you're working in sync with someone rather than kind of totally different directions, which a lot of people can kind of start something off and then they want to go in different directions with it.
And it's such a tear, it's such a pull 100%. Then, really.
And we have different skill sets and we do different things in the business, but we have the same overall vision, which I think has what kept Rick so in quite a niche kind of like... aesthetic and quite a niche look.
And so ye were together for 4 years in college. You lived together as well?
Yeah, we did. Yeah. We lived with each other.
And so at what point did you decide, okay, well, there's something missing and we want to create it, or we can actually go into business together?
Do you know what? I think the last year of university when we'd done projects together, we... We're like, we'd love to do this. But obviously you kind of have these dreams and you think, oh, we're actually going to do it. How will it work? And then I had started working at ASOS then straight away. Like, I think I'd done my like last exam and was there like a week later working.
Okay, yeah.
And as much as I loved it, I just felt so passionate about the product. And I didn't want to, I felt there was a huge gap in terms of like the kind of creativity side of it and looking at what you could buy for your money on the contemporary floor.
Yeah,
it didn't add up to me because I could see how much things were costing. And I started understanding the price and architecture and how suppliers worked and everything that goes with being a buyer, and kind of felt like, well, if I could bring my creativity but also my commercial eye, we could bring something different to kind of that entry level price point that would sit on Net-a-Porter. And actually, when you read a magazine and you look at the price of a dress and it's meant to be accessible, but it was never accessible. It's like, that's not how me and all of our friends kind of lived and spent money.
No.
And it was like, we wanted to create a brand that actually was different.
But you and your friends probably also appreciated the good things and you like silks. Like that was always my thing. I like a really nice silk dress, but I don't want to pay crazy money for it. And that's why when I found you guys, I was like, God, like it's so unusual to find something of this quality at this price point.
That was the thing. There was nothing, because I think when you get into more the kind of luxury market, you tend to get designers that don't have as much a commerciality in terms of how they actually make things. Like when we first went to get our supplier, I never forget, they seen two blonde girls coming and probably thought, we'll just rip them off.
Yeah.
And I was just like, having absolutely none of this. So I went back with two pieces that I took, cut out the label and said, well, just tell me how much you can make these for then. Because I think they would always ask us, well, how much do you want to sell it for?
Okay. And that's not the question.
Was like, no, because you're just going to work back and then next thing, I'm going to have the cost price of something that isn't actually what that garment's worth. You're only basically doing it off what you think I want to sell it for. And I'm like, that's not how I ever want to work as a business. And I think that commerciality.
So they were deciding your price point
exactly.
Then. Yeah.
So okay. I was like, having none of this. I was like, well, I'm not telling you the price point, because what's the price point? If you go on Net-a-Porter, you could see a silk blouse ranging from £150 probably up until about £900.
Yeah.
And if I took that to a factory, it's not made any different way.
Exactly.
It's the marketing, it's the psychology behind it. It's where that brand wants to position itself.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to work like that because I don't myself buy into that.
No.
It's not really me. And I wanted a brand that I felt that I could have that nice fabric,
mm-hmm.
unique design, not sitting in the high street everywhere, but that actually I felt like had that little bit of a vintage look as well, but yeah. it was quite modern, contemporary, fit it really well. Because that was the thing, like I loved vintage, but I'd always try stuff on and go, that's not how I want it to fit.
I know, you'd have to adjust.
So there's always like that element you had to give up mm-hmm. for the love of it.
Yeah.
And it was that, that's why we wanted to do Rixos. We wanted to have that element of vintage, really nice fit, really nice fabrics, and then obviously all the prints and stuff were yeah. hand painted
at an accessible price point.
Exactly,
then.
Yeah.
And so then, how did it happen? So you obviously visited a few suppliers,
yeah.
and they're deciding what your garment is going to cost.
That was exactly what we done. The first probably five or six, they were just a total no go. They just weren't even entertaining how we wanted to work.
And do you think a lot of this was down to two young blonde girls walking? Imagine yeah. that.
It's like,
you should go back and have your Julia Roberts moment and be like, now look.
Well, it's just psychology. I think people look at what's in front of them and then decide.
Yeah.
And especially in like the rag trade, it's quite an old fashioned industry.
Mm-hmm. You know, these around London, if you don't mind me asking.
Yeah, around London. Okay. Like you go into a factory and you'd get these like, you know, older men that would run the factory. They'd just see you coming and think. And I knew they could see me coming and I was just like,
it's exhausting, and the outcome is decided before you even open your mouth.
So what I would do is I took in garments and cut out the label. I think it was like an And Other Stories coat was one of them. I can't remember the other one. So I knew the retail price, and obviously working in buying,
mm-hmm.
if I know the retail price, I know that they would have made it for X amount.
Yeah.
And the cost prices they were giving me were above the retail price. So okay. I just straight away was like, well, I can't be competitive in this market if you're giving me cost prices that are higher than what I can buy that at in the high street. Then how would a normal customer ever
afford it
or feel like there's value for money there? And that's what I done. I literally went and done it until I got to the factory where I felt we're being honest with us. And instead of charging what they think they could charge based on two young blondes
coming. And was that in China then? Was that?
Well, they had an office in London.
Okay.
And they were a lot more honest in terms of, well, that's the fabric and this is how much it would cost to make.
Okay.
And there were some China factories that done the same, try to rip us off.
Yeah.
So it was a total kind of bit of a cat and mouse game for the first
It's hard,
months,
yeah. And so you found that supplier then, and for a while did you said before you worked for them actually as a go-between.
As much as we found the factory and we're like, this is great, they're being honest with us, this is what we want. China just want massive minimums.
Yeah.
Like, want to make hundreds of dresses, and we didn't want to do that. And again, it was this whole thing about being sustainable. There's nothing worse than going and getting a dress now, and then it's like 50% off in like 2 months' time.
Yeah.
And you just kind of feel like there's this like mentality where everyone's just overpurchasing because they don't want to miss out on a sale. Like, I don't even know working and buying. The buyers would rather sell as much as they can and then discount 30% if they had to, rather than miss out on something selling out.
And then for the customer, you do feel a little bit like, I should have hung on maybe.
Oh,
yeah,
you know, wait around and you feel like everyone's got it. And for us, it was that we don't want to be in that mentality where we're just overproducing to try and maximize as much as we can. And that was the mentality for a lot of retailers.
But ye have managed to maintain that. And there's an integrity that remains through Rixo, even despite this crazy growth, because it's been nuts. You know, I was looking through your list of stockists this morning and you are global, but you still maintain that integrity that no item is mass produced. Like, there was a dress yesterday that went up on your Instagram, it was 1 of 98.
Yeah.
So I know I can buy that, and I'm not going to go to a wedding and someone else is going to be 100%. Wearing that.
Yeah.
And so it's very clever to be able to do that, to be able to grow the way you have, but to be able to maintain the individuality for the customer. I think that's amazing.
I think that's the thing as well, because we don't have any investors, we don't have these like targets in front of us. As much as we're very business minded ourselves, mm-hmm. and we as a business like to keep quite agile, sometimes there's things in budget that go way above our expectation, and there's other times we'll pull back.
Yeah.
And I think it's when you've got those investors, you've got people kind of breathing down your neck, I feel like that's where a lot of brands can get into trouble, where they do things based on having to hit targets because someone's sitting there, everyone's 30% of the company is telling them, mm-hmm. and it's not actually there living and breathing. And things are up and down all the time within a business, and I think it's about not being afraid to go with the flow and go with what you feel is right. Mm-hmm. Sometimes rather than just putting things out there to hit targets and hit numbers. And that's where, like, I remember our first kind of big orders, we were going back to the buyers and asked them to decrease it because we didn't think that they could hit those numbers week on week. And that's probably quite unusual for a designer to actually even think about stuff like that. Yeah. But
do you think that you're going to maintain that going forward? I'm sure that there are investors knocking on your door every day.
Yeah.
Imagine.
I think for us, it is about trying to keep it completely in-house.
Yeah.
And we've just kept the door closed on that.
Right.
And that's the thing, because we never spent money within the company until we felt like we could.
Yeah. This is all a sign of how savvy you guys were, because, okay, first of all, you're eyeing up your models in the gym nearby and you're working with your supplier, and everything was very creative at the start, and you had to be to make this, because there was a small, I suppose, investment from yourselves. Mm-hmm. You didn't have any big backers. But I just think that's a wonderful story.
Yeah, it was total naivety as well, honestly. We still look back and laugh our heads off at some of the stuff that we were doing that first year, just trying to figure stuff out and trying to figure out how to do things. But I think there's nothing more than just getting on with it and then trying to change. Like, I remember we'd done our first wholesale market in Paris, and we'd rented a space from, we wanted to do this agency, but it was too expensive. So our whole idea was, well, we'll wait until the last week where they're definitely not going to sell any more space. Mm-hmm. And we'll just swoop in and say, well, look, if you've got anything free, we'll take it. And if not, we can't afford anymore. And they did. And turned out we were in Paris a week later selling this collection.
Wow.
Well, every day we changed the dates of when we were going to deliver the goods based on what the buyers wanted. I mean, there was no strategy whatsoever. They were like, well, we want that in March. And I was like, all right, well, you can have it in March. I hadn't have a clue if I was going to be able to get it in time for March.
Lying by the seat of your pants.
By the start of it, we'll deliver that in August. And then by day two.
It was next week. We need it.
The other brands in the showroom were all like kind of sitting around going like, what are these two up to? What are they doing? But we were just sitting there, had no experience, and just asked questions. And kind of just figured it out along the way.
And you're doing it all together and living together. The last time I met you, you were saying, I met the two of you together in Brent Thomas, and you always just look fabulous. But someone had shoes on that I commented, and you're like, I think they're mine. Like, you don't know. Like, you remind me of sisters. Like, you don't know who's this what. Good. You're just such good friends, and it's amazing that translates so well into business. It's incredible.
Well, we got to this point where we're just buying everything together, because all we'd done was work together, we lived together, we had the same friends.
Yeah.
We do vintage shopping together, so we'd be like, well, we'll just buy that together.
Yeah.
And then now that we're actually going to move out, don't know who's going to get what.
Oh my God.
Like, we're going to have to create a wardrobe in the office. It's like, yeah, that can be the
communal.
The communal Gucci's wardrobe.
Or whatever it is. Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting. But
so what's the headcount? So it started out you guys doing everything, packing bags in your living room. And now, I mean, what does business look like for Rixo?
That was actually probably the hardest thing, was growing the team. Because it's kind of like, you don't start off thinking that you're going to be a manager. Like, that's not a strength that you necessarily just have or you're trained to have. But actually, and it's kind of knowing, like, where to start delegating, what becomes a full-time role that was just a little bit of this, and what do you prioritise? And now we're 28, 29.
Headcount of 29, wow.
And a lot of it's growing probably in the last 12 months.
Yeah. I like the way you recruit too.
Yeah.
You know, it's always on Instagram, so it's always going to be somebody who's a fan of the brand. You know, you'll put out there that we're looking for this, that, and that. And the last time you did that recruitment was so funny, because it was like, we're looking for this person and that person. We need somebody on that category. And it's like, the growth is just,
it is. I think as well, like, there is so much to be said, I think, for the people that you have in your team.
Yeah.
And as much as me and Henriette have done what we've done up until now, we know we're never going to get to that next stage without people that are in the way of thinking that we are. They don't mind change, quite agile, quite proactive, positive, just getting on with things. And that's why we interview everyone. I interview them, Henriette interviews them. We have someone else from the team randomly just to see if they're a culture fit.
Okay.
The office is just so open, and it is one of those things, if you got someone in that was a bit negative and a bit draining or wasn't in your way of thinking, mm-hmm. it can totally change the atmosphere.
Oh, the dynamic of the office is so important, absolutely.
So everyone that we have in our office at the minute has went through quite a rigorous, not in a bad way, induction. But just... There's nothing when you meet someone and you get that gut feeling about someone. And obviously you've got to work and they've got to do the job. But that element of doing the job and then not having the culture fit is just a complete no for us, because
there's a personality that goes to Rixo and it kind of shines. It does shine out, honestly. You and Henrietta aren't, we don't see much of ye on Instagram anymore because it's so big now, but that personality remains, you know. It's
Henrietta
warm.
Still does all the Instagram.
Does she?
Oh yeah, she's in the car in the morning. It's so funny, if I go and get a coffee and she's in the car, I can see her, she's like there posting away.
And tell me about the collaborations then, because, you know, the most recent one was Christian Lacroix, and that was beautiful. That's just launched now. So how, like...
I thought we got spammed email.
Oh my God.
Because a lot of people our age don't know Christian Lacroix, but actually it's such a kind of ab fab era. But if you like vintage and you're on like First Dibs and these websites and you're looking at jewellery and accessories, like Christian Lacroix is... honestly got the most amazing pieces.
Yeah.
And we used to have all the stuff saved down. So when we actually got the email, we were like, well, this cannot be. And then we were like, well, that's a London address. We'll ring the number, because they had an agency here that approached us for them. And because we're in Paris all the time with work, we ended up going over to their, they have like a maison, like the Christian Lacroix maison that we went to, and
fabulous.
Met the team and the CEO and stuff. And we were like, okay, well, it's actually legit. There are people in front of us. it's not a fake email.
Wow.
And it was what a total dream come true, because you do have to try and think sometimes of how vintage can relate back to different customers.
Yeah.
And sometimes what I would wear wouldn't be the same as another customer, and vice versa.
Yeah.
There's things, we have different customers and we try and design in different ways for different people.
Mm-hmm.
So this was kind of letting us like get a bit like lit loose, basically, in this archive where it was true vintage.
Wow.
It was very 80s and very bright and vibrant. And we basically went into the archive. We actually even had pieces saved down that weren't even in the archive that I had just saved down that had inspired
randomly
me. That I was
previously.
Like, yeah, I've seen this print. This has to exist somewhere. Just try and find it, which is in the collection. It's the print that's all really brightly multicolored with like the old Christian Lacroix bags in the print. And they never had it, but I was like, well, it's there. It has to be there.
And so what was that like just for you to let loose in that sweet shop of an archive? Oh
amazing.
My God.
And then that's how we started like playing around with the prints, and I basically was recoloring and like putting them together in the shapes, and it just all started coming together. And we'd been working on it for about a year and we were so excited, and then we wanted to keep it really special. So we only partnered with a couple of wholesale partners. We'd done London because that was our base.
Mm-hmm.
We'd done Paris because Christian Lacroix was French.
Mm-hmm.
And that was literally how we basically done it, was kind of just keep it really special like that. And then obviously we sold it as well.
And then for other stores, you like, so for Brand Thomas, there's a Brand Thomas exclusive coming out as well. And I just think that really just creates something special that nobody else has, you know. So we'll have that in Brand Thomas, and that won't be online, or that won't be available.
Yeah, I think I'm quite biased. Everyone's like, how comes Brand Thomas always seems to have all the most exclusive? I'm like, but it is, for me, it's like quite a special thing, because obviously I feel quite proud about having it in Ireland. And just even, I used to work in like Reset in Belfast, and understanding the customer and how much, like, I think clothes for people where I'm from anyway, especially like women, like that, they want to feel really good about themselves.
Of course.
It's such a big thing about dressing up and looking nice, and there is a bit more of a relaxed atmosphere to that in London, but I know.
Yeah.
And
I still like to get dolled up here.
It makes people feel like amazing about themselves. Yeah. And I feel like I've always had that like special place for kind of having exclusives, like for like people I know, and I kind of having that Irish customer always at the forefront of like our minds. So they probably get quite a lot compared to a bit more attention.
Keep doing it.
And some
keep
of the stuff, honestly, is like, I kind of think, where were we going, and where are we wearing it to? And it's that mentality of understanding the customer.
But I also think it makes it special in that, you know, we've talked about the growth and the fact that Rixo is stocked across the globe, but you still don't want to be that brand that is everywhere the same thing. So those exclusives make it mean, you know, that like, okay, I'll get it in Brand Thomas, but I won't see it on every person on Instagram.
We've just kept it. I mean, the way, not to bore anyone with all the details of how wholesale works, but it's a huge business to get your head around.
Yeah.
And most of the time you'll go exclusive for one season and then the next season you open it up to the rest of the stores.
Yeah.
And actually, although we could probably be greedy and got a lot more orders and more money in from other stores, we've just kept it exclusive from day one with Brown Thomas in all of Ireland, which not a lot of brands will do that when they can get money from other stores and other people of interest. But that's just something that I think we kept kind of true to what we really believed in. And having those exclusive pieces as well in terms of the collections.
Yeah.
If anything, I actually... God love her merchandiser, because she's like, stop adding more options to the collection. But I actually think it's nicer that the bigger we get, the more versatility there is in terms of like where you can only see certain pieces.
And so there must be, like you say, then independent retailers and other retailers knocking on the door all the time. So it has to take restraint, A, not to respond to the investors who want to get in on the action, and B, the retailers who are saying, I'm going to sell as much as I can get of your clothes. Like that must be hard as essentially new, it's not even 5 years old yet, to manage that restraint.
And we never done it right. I remember the first couple of years was actually quite hard to get the balance.
Yeah.
And by no means did we have the perfect strategy in place. Mm. And there were sometimes we were like, oh, I don't really know if that's right, or should we look for that store or not look for that store? But we essentially just went with their instinct on it.
Okay.
And some people were really disappointed they didn't get the brand and things like that. And you feel off. I remember taking it really personal at the time.
Yeah.
Because most of the times the designer has a separation between themselves and the buyer, where there's an agency that'll work in between and do all the horrible conversations and the yes and the no's. Whereas we never had that separation. I remember being in Paris like crying my eyes out, thinking I was the worst person in the world.
Yeah,
honestly.
Because you're disappointing them, I guess, but you have to protect your brand.
And it is horrible to do that.
And has there been anybody advising you guys, like, you know, even a family member or somebody else in business that you've been able to go to and say, look, what do you think? Does this make sense? Or is it just you and Henrietta?
I mean, most of it has been me and Henrietta. So my twin sister, who I was saying, she's does a lot of interiors, and she trained to be an architect, and she'd done this house, and huge big house in Chelsea, for an old man that had retired, him and his wife. And he was like, they were always away like picking marbles and doing all these trips together, and they got into this conversation. He wanted to basically mentor young businesses because he was retired and had time in his hands. And he is a trained accountant, and he came in and was like, girls, what are you even doing? You've not even done a tax return. There was no, I remember there was me and Henrietta were just going along with these PO numbers, and we did not know what we were doing. I think to his shock, he was like, right, we need to get an account. We need to get an accountancy firm. Oh, it was so funny, honestly. We look back and think he must have actually wanted to keel over and just have a heart attack based on what he'd seen.
Based on the no tax
returns. Honestly, it was, but it was kind of like, you didn't laugh, you cry. But he helped us with the kind of finance side of things, in terms of just, we were so worried about cash though, but then didn't really understand just the processes in place, like management accounts and end of year accounts and all this kind of stuff that you don't really know what you're doing. So he helped us basically get an accountancy firm and understand how you should report.
Okay.
More the reporting side.
Yeah.
We were just like, we can't spend a penny. We cannot spend a penny. We have
no money. Not to the IRS, for sure.
If anything, it was him that was actually helped us kind of understand that actually you do have good cash flow and you can spend money where needed. Whereas me and Henrietta were probably too on the cautious side. We were too cautious to the point where it probably would have actually prohibited growth if we hadn't have had that overarching view of like where the company was going and could go.
Okay.
So he's been amazing in terms of helping with that. And we've had one of our first ever customers as well. She is a lawyer, and she's probably one of the most special people I think me and her have actually ever met. Like, we class her as like one of her like best friends.
Oh.
And she came, knocked on our living room door. It was her student home, and had bought a top which we'd only ever made 50 off, and read up about us online, and she just had this like sense that she wanted to come and help us.
Wow.
And she came and like knocked on our door and said, I've read your story, I bought one of your blouses, I've had so much compliments, you've made me feel so good about myself. And she's called Anastasia, and honestly, she has been like the biggest blessing in disguise in terms of like reading over contracts and what we should look out for.
Fantastic.
And at the start, we used to just pair in dresses and stuff. It was like, yeah, so unprofessional.
I
mean,
but I would be happy with that.
But and she's like a partner in one of like the top law firms.
Isn't that
in London.
Great? But that's a testament
and
to the business.
She's just is like a friend. Mm. So I kind of feel like as much as there's not been that like retail guru, there's been people along the way like that have been like a total blessing.
So what is life like now? Obviously you're not packing bags in your living room anymore, but is there a little bit of downtime? Are you able to, it
you
still seems
last,
so busy.
Yeah, well, this last year I'd have definitely taken more weekends off than probably I did for the last few years before. And even at that, it's not to say that I would ever begrudge taking a week. I think when you have a business, you just have to go along with it, no matter. You don't ever begrudge it.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, the first few years were really hard. I was never out the door. My twin sister's boyfriend used to think I was like a made up person because I was just never out. Like, never out. Was total singleton.
Yeah.
Everyone was like, is she ever going to have a boyfriend? What's going on here?
But you've got that balance now.
Oh, and all of my friends are still at home. They're all like married off or boyfriends and stuff. Yeah. And they just stopped asking because they're like, well, there's no point.
She's got a business,
though.
But
it has got better. And I would never change any of it. Mm. And it was so nice to do it with like Henry is like one of my best friends. And it's been nice that at least we used to, honestly, the first year we were both obsessed with, I was actually telling my boyfriend on the way over here, this program, Love Hate.
Yeah. So,
anytime
did
we
you
were
get
just,
Henrietta into that?
Oh, we're obsessed.
Okay, obsessed. Good Irish TV.
It was Frano and Nedge, the two of them were like, oh, the first time Henrietta came to Dublin, she got the taxi man to put on a Frano accent. Stop. Oh, it was so funny. That was like our little like downtime. We just would watch an episode of that. Like, but that
probably,
was all. That was the only
because,
downtime really.
Oh, God.
Had.
That's not going to relax you too much. Probably because you live together.
It made our problems not seem like problems, put it like that. It was like, oh, yeah, ours is.
Okay,
ours
we're still alive.
Easy.
Yay.
You get shot at.
But so we took. You know, you obviously have a very clear vision of where the company is going.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've been clear about which retailers you want to go with and how to protect the brand in that manner. But like it or not, even if the label doesn't say Rixo, the influence has been there. Mm. And I do really believe that Rixo has changed our style of dressing, you know, be it whether you're buying the Rixo dress or not, because the copycat dress started then. Mm. And how do you feel about that? Like, I mean, it was everywhere.
Do you know what? I actually don't get myself like too head up about it because I always feel like, first of all, the fabric is never the same. Like you'll get... And that the whole thing was about the fabric in the first place for me. Like if I went into Topshop when I was at university, I would only go straight to boutique because I knew the fabric
Same.
Was nice.
Yes.
I'm like, I didn't want a polyester dress.
Mm-hmm.
I would rather have something in silk or a nice fabric or it was made well. So that was the first thing. Was like, well, they're never going to use the fabrics that we use because they won't pay the money. Like we worked in High Street. I know the level of pricing on fabrics that they would pick and they would never, ever, ever stretch to anywhere we would go with it. And then the second thing was that the ideas and the prints and the way the brand has developed is always going to be to me and Henrietta's personality aesthetic rather than it being about a trend. So as much as even the brand at the minute, there's these copycats out, in the future, there's other ideas that I have that they've never seen. And they never will.
It's almost a compliment, really, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think the fit and the cut and how it makes someone feel, how it makes someone feel is actually so important to me. So even, like, I'd love someone to go in to say the Rixo shop or go into Brown Thomas, try something on and go, I've never felt better in that. There's nothing, to me, there's nothing worse when someone sees something online and they love the idea and they love the print or the colour, they go on and just feel frumpy or
I know, and it's such a
not what I expected. Doesn't make me feel good.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, if you can make someone feel good about themselves and then also feel a bit different and they love the style, then it's a total investment.
And I also think as well, it's like, it's so reliable, you know, like I know if I've got something coming up, well, there's something there that's, you know, I know I'll get something that works in Rixo, you know, that, and that's a good relationship to have with your customer too. So how do you feel then? Okay, so you've just come from London. So you've been through two airports. So you've probably seen about 130 Rixo wearers. But like, how do you feel when you see people on the street wearing Rixo?
I want to say, Louise, sometimes I actually feel like I'm a stalker. I'm like, if it wasn't sending you postcards and saying, I know who you are.
It's like, oh God, she's behind me.
I definitely forget sometimes. It's amazing. I'm so unaware sometimes if I'm actually just sitting staring at how someone's wearing the skirt or what they're wearing. And we go up all the time, be like, oh, like, how does it feel? Or,
oh, but people must love it.
Yeah. And then there's other times where, like, you don't want to bother someone, but you just get a bit of satisfaction out of seeing someone wearing it. Yeah. And I'm not in any way snobby about people just wearing it. It's in fashion. I actually love the fact that people can wear it, just put it on, and, like, getting an email and someone going, I've never felt better. Or you'll get, like, even like the mother of a bride, like we get emails all the time being like, I didn't want to wear like a typical mother of the bride. You made me feel like so amazing on the day.
Well, that's fab.
And it's like, it's that feeling that clothes should give you.
What about the celebrity following though? Because that is outrageous too. I think like it was maybe you were 6 months in and Kylie was rocking your gear. Kylie Minogue, the Kylie.
Yeah.
You know, that can't get old.
You can kind of name drop that one quite. Like if I said to my dad, like, oh, someone's wearing it on Instagram, he's like, who and what and what even is Instagram? Whereas I think when you say someone, oh, Kylie Minogue, at least your dad's like, oh yeah, she's yeah, she is doing
show me the picture.
it is like, obviously you kind of have to pinch yourself when you see people that wearing it.
Do you know what I forgot to tell you as well? You know, we're saying that it you know, moms wear it, mother of the bride, young girls, everybody wears it. Pregnantly, I wore Rixo throughout my entire pregnancy.
Did you?
Yeah. Honestly. And it was kind of the stuff
we had a pregnant lady in her last
did you?
Yeah. And she was like 8 months pregnant. So but it's absolutely
for
rocking
some
it.
Reason, there's something about the Rixo dresses that even when I was asking, I was doing this head count of how much we have in my cousins and all that. And one of my cousins has just had a baby and she was like, I wore it throughout as well. And it's just, I don't know, is there a stretch or something?
Well, actually, I've just came from doing training on the floor with all the staff at Brown Thomas. And I was explaining about how the dresses, honestly, if you get me started on fit, I would be here until the cows came home. Because everyone in the office laughs at me. They're like, you're so obsessed with fit and how it makes someone feel. And one of the elements that we always put into a lot of our dresses is a bias cut bottom.
Okay.
And there's this preconception that bias cut can be unflattering.
Okay.
But it's actually just because it's quite expensive to cut in the bias, which means you kind of turn the fabric on a 45 degree angle, essentially.
Okay.
You cut it, but it means you get a lot of wastage of fabric. But at the same time, when you put it on, it stretches.
Okay.
So it's not rigid, where when you put on a dress and sometimes if it doesn't fit in your hip, it ain't going over your hip.
Yeah.
If you put on a bias cut dress,
it will move.
It
with
will
you.
Move with the fluidity of your body.
And the growing belly that you have.
Exactly. Yes.
It's fine.
Like I have some dresses from over three different sizes because the dress almost fits into how it should fit on my body.
Yeah.
And I would probably say a good 60% of our range is bias cut.
Okay. So it's got that flexibility.
That's why
we can share it. Yeah, and get pregnant and wear it all the time and not have to buy that awful maternity gear.
Yeah.
So tell me, what's the plans for the future?
Well, so I've just came back from India, actually. I've been doing loads of work with the factories in terms of fit.
Mm-hmm.
We've not even told anyone this yet, but basically...
Another brand that was exclusive. I love it.
Well, there is more exclusives coming out, actually. We are working on other categories like... bridal.
Oh wow.
I was in the office yesterday and I was fitting everything, because I fit everything on me as well.
Yeah.
And just, it's really fun. I'll just stand in front of the mirror just for about 10 minutes and just get my thoughts on it before rushing into making any like decisions on what to do with it. But we'd actually been approached probably about 2 years ago to do it. And I was like, there's absolutely no way I would ever put my name to bridal until I'm like 100% like perfected fit with those kind of dresses, because
that's a big ask.
Such a I just think there's such an element to, like, if someone wants to feel good, like, on your wedding day, it's like the biggest thing.
Mm.
My sister's getting married in June, and I'm actually doing her bridal dress, and I have been around all the bridal shops with her, and she's just like, I feel frumpy in that. 1 minute they're putting big clips in the back. That's a heartburn task, isn't it? Yeah. Here, and
the
fabrications and the way it's been cut and the way the linings are and how it fits, it's like, in my head, I'm like, that's just all wrong. I'm having an absolute canary in the corner. Yeah. It's not even me getting married, that it's not been constructed. And I'm like a total, like, when I was younger, I used to cut everything to how I liked it. And my mom was like, there was a pair of scissors missing in the house. They were all in my bedroom because I had collected every pair of scissors. Because there's nothing ever right how I fit in it. So I think bridal and...
I think bridal is overcomplicated, yeah. Isn't it? Like you say, it has to be a certain way and it has to weigh this much. And you just want a nice dress that makes you feel good.
Honestly.
I remember being much happier with my day two dress than my wedding dress because that was me. Not that I felt I had to look a certain way in my wedding. So that's very exciting.
So there's that, all things like that that's going on.
So we've gone from the beautiful silk dresses and scarves to swimwear.
Knitwear's done so well.
Yeah, knitwear was fabulous. So bridal potential, well, bridal. Is kids wear something you might go down the line?
I think there's so much, to be honest.
Now you're going to be a godmother tomorrow.
I know. So I should add all the books.
That would be a nice present. I'm launching a collection for you.
We've had so many requests for men's shirts. Every guy that I know is like, can you just do a really cool print in a shirt like this?
This is it.
And actually, there is such an opportunity for things like that as well.
Yeah. My husband has said that a couple of times, that I'd love if that was...
There's a waiting list of like people that's like waiting for stuff, and I'm like, hold on, we've got enough. We're still trying to do this and do that, but everything, even like shoes, I'm obsessed with shoes.
So the possibilities,
more
are
accessories, even interiors, even just doing like, I've got some like classic shapes that I just love, and I'm like, I just want that in plain black, because some days you do just want something in black, or you just want a basic in that, and even the knitwear, like there's so much knitwear ideas that I have, that's why we're going to start working with another factory in Italy, is so that I can go over and do more development, because the way I want to do knitwear, I've not really seen it done in the ideas that I have it.
Yeah.
Because it's how it hangs and the fluidity of it, which is something I'd be quite obsessive about, and I just can't seem to find the right pieces.
Well, it's really exciting to see what comes next. It's honestly been a joy. Like, I'm like, you know, I'm the Stalker fan. I'm like, I was with you from your first album.
You actually were, honestly.
But it's lovely. It's been amazing to watch the growth, and it's so well deserved, because Rixo is really special, and so are you. Thank you for joining me today.
Not at all. It's been so nice to come over. I was like, I can't miss this since I came through.
Always good chat. Thank you so much, Orla.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Palmas podcast. If you like what you heard, make sure to share and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And follow us on Official Brand Palmas on Instagram for more updates.